This is Fresh Air. In last night's presidential debate, only one question was asked about racial divisions in our country. My guest Ron Walter says the debate failed to adequately address African Americans, and so has the entire campaign. Walters is the author of Black Presidential Politics in America. He's been a staff member and advisor to several members of the Congressional Black Caucus and was deputy campaign manager for issues in Jesse Jackson's 1984 presidential campaign. Walters is the chairperson of Howard University's Political Science Department. The issue of race was raised last night by John Mashek. His question was this: racial division continues to tear apart our great cities, the latest example being Los Angeles. Why is this still happening in America, and what would you do to end it? I asked Walters what he thought of the question.
I didn't think that the quality of the question really was what the problem deserves. This election is taking place against the backdrop of Los Angeles and several other cities just having exploded. And a piece of legislation now is actually dying in the United States Congress. And so I think that this really was an opportunity for all three of them to say something in relatively specific terms about what it is they would do about that problem. And what we heard really were generalities about race.
Let me ask you about each of the candidates' responses to the question. President Bush said in response that he had passed two forward-looking civil rights bills. Would you care to comment on the president's civil rights record?
Well, I think the president was a little disingenuous about his record because finally when he signed the 1991 Civil Rights Act after having previously vetoed it, I think he did so out of tremendous pressures. One of those, of course, was the pressure at the time of David Duke, who was running very well in Louisiana, who was claiming that he was running on a Republican record, and therefore Bush wanted to distance himself from David Duke as a racist. And the other one, of course, was Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas. This was being postured as a piece of civil rights legislation that would be particularly effective for women's rights, and therefore the president felt the pressure of the women's movement as a result of the Anita Hill affair and felt that he had to sign it if he wanted to get their votes upon re-election. So in both cases, I think he really was pressured into signing something that he thought all along and said was really a quota bill. So I really don't think the president has a civil rights record to run on.
In one of his answers during last night's debate, the president said that he thought the decline in urban America stems from the decline in the American family.
I think the president is right about that. What he didn't go on to say were the reasons for the decline in the family. And I think that what has happened is that the Republican, especially the far right-wing ideologues, have suggested that the reason for the decline in the family had to do with individual circumstances and personal behavior, rather than the massive withdrawal of resources from the inner-city urban areas, which has taken place over the course of the last dozen years or so.
Let's get to Bill Clinton's response to the question about race and cities. And the governor said that he's taken his message to African Americans. He said he's devoted a major portion of his campaign saying to African Americans, Asians, Latinos, and whites, if the American people can't be brought together, we can't turn this country around. If we do come together, nothing can stop us. What did you think of that response?
I think his response was anemic. I think he's got the principle right, which is bringing people together. But the question becomes, how do you bring them together? Do you change, help to change their socioeconomic circumstances so that they're able genuinely to meet together across the table of common circumstances? So how do you do that? And what steps, concrete steps, do you take in order to effectuate bringing people together than simply rhetorically? And it's in that vein that I thought that his answer was rather weak.
Ross Perot said, we have to love one another because united teams win, divided teams lose.
I think he's certainly correct. But here again, I think he gave a substantially rhetorical answer. And Ross Perot said he felt so strongly about it that even in a subsequent answer, he had to come back and deal with the racial question. And in that particular instance, he said, if you hate, then I don't want your vote. And I think that was taken very well. But even Ross Perot didn't really spell out to the American people how race is articulated in a meaningful way in 1992. It is not just a question of brotherhood and loving one another and bringing people together. It is the question of providing the substantial resources by which all people can live together in dignity as American citizens.
We spoke during the primary campaign, and I asked you then how important you thought the African-American vote was seen as being in the Democratic primary. Let me ask you the same question now in the presidential campaign. How important do you think each of the candidates sees the African-American vote as being to them for a win? Now, and this isn't to imply that I think that all African-Americans vote the same way, but still groups of Americans are seen as voting blocks.
Well, the political history of the black community is that there has been a dominant vote for one party or the other. And so it is a proper question to ask how important is the black vote in 1992 as perceived by the candidates. I think none of the candidates, at least in the way in which I've detected it, considered the black vote to be critical to their electoral fortunes. In the past, of course, the black vote has been the balance of power in very close races as far back as 1976 when Jimmy Carter ran. But I think that this time around, the Bill Clinton looks at the black vote to some extent as a liability. There have been a number of analyses that have said that the black vote, of course, was the reason why substantial numbers of whites, and particularly Reagan Democrats, were running away from the Democratic Party. So I think he has postured his campaign, both in the primary and in the general electoral season, toward substantial white blocks of voters in the suburbs, Reagan Democrats in the cities, close-in suburbs, and other places, competing with George Bush on his own home turf.
What's Jesse Jackson been up to? You used to work in his campaign, so I figure you must know.
Well, Jesse Jackson has been trying to be a good soldier. He is now leading a voter registration drive. In fact, it just ended. And I might say that his voter registration efforts began at his National Rainbow Coalition Conference. You remember the one in which Bill Clinton came and talked about Sister Soldier?
Mm-hmm.
Well, at that meeting, he had formulated a nonpartisan, independent voter registration campaign. And even after the conference, even after the remarks by Clinton, proceeded to go out and register voters. Subsequently, he was tapped by Ron Brown to do voter registration in a $1 million campaign, which was really woefully short. And then I think he has begun to do some very important registering of voters in a number of cities in the Midwest, the South, and in the East.
You say that Jackson is trying to be a good soldier. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is that I have not never been certain that Reverend Jackson was enthusiastic about this ticket. The ticket, I think, did as much as it could to distance itself from Reverend Jackson. And still, he is helping all that he can. So I think that in that sense, it takes a lot to put your own feelings aside and to go for the cause of the Democratic Party, the cause of black constituents who might benefit from a better administration than George Bush's. And so to this extent, I think even though he isn't enthusiastic, I think he's doing what he conceives to be in the interest of others rather than just himself.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Ronald Walters, and he's the author of Black Presidential Politics in America. He's the chairman of the Political Science Department at Howard and was a consultant to Jesse Jackson's campaign. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Ron Walters, author of the book Black Presidential Politics in America. What are some of the issues pertaining to race and pertaining to cities that you think should be addressed in this campaign that aren't getting addressed or aren't getting sufficiently dealt with?
Well, I think as the candidates talk about public policy, especially about national economic development or about job training or about education, simply because these things are mentioned, the public might get the impression that one is automatically talking about and including the inner city areas. That's not necessarily true. It's possible to talk about these things and expend the resources in a way which really doesn't affect inner city areas as we saw in the 1980s. A tremendous period of economic growth in the 1980s, And yet, much of that growth occurred right around the inner city areas that needed it most. So what I think is necessary is when one talks, for example, about economic growth, to target the inner city areas, to talk about the sorts of programs that would truly initiate economic growth in those areas, self-sustaining growth so that people could have jobs and businesses and hire people in those communities and revitalize those communities. If one talks about education, again, I think it's necessary to talk about public education, where most inner-city children are, and how one improves the quality of that education. The same with issues like job training. We have a job training program, JIPTA. We've had it for some time, Job Training and Partnership Act. It has not been effective at dealing with job training for the hardcore unemployed. And so the question, again, is targeting. So that you have an effective program which deals with the problems of that particular constituency. So I would say generally that unless one talks in relatively specific terms about these kind of issues and does so with sensitive targeting, I don't think you're going to have not only the appeal to the black constituency, but valid policies actually to deal with the problem once you have a new administration.
If race hasn't been a real talking point in this campaign, are you pleased at least that there hasn't been like a Willie Horton campaign in which there was a code way of talking about race? Or perhaps there has been one?
Well, I haven't seen yet the kind of power that the last Willie Horton symbol raised in the American electorate. I think that we have had a lot of talk about this was Willie Horton or that Willie Horton. We now have a concept which has passed into the lexicon of American politics, and it's used for a variety of things. But certainly I think it's possible to isolate some of these things. For example, take the issue of welfare reform.
Mm-hmm.
I think when one looks at the way in which the campaigns have treated this issue, welfare reform, one can find that both Democrats and Republicans have used this issue as sort of a racially coded issue. Same thing with the issue of crime. So that there are a number of racially coded issues now which perform that function of sending signals to certain constituencies that the candidate will deal with the ethnic populations associated with those issues in a particular way. The welfare reform issue, both Reagan and Bush have associated themselves with a relatively punitive way of treating welfare recipients with respect to the issue of crime. Clinton says we need 100,000 more police on the street to deal with the issue of crime. That's a very questionable assumption. So I think that when you see these concepts put out, I think it's very easy to see that, yes, they are using Willie Hortonism, but it is not recognized as using it in a way which evokes the very powerful symbolism of the past.
How would you grade President Bush's record in his 4 years as president in dealing with African-American issues?
Well, I think that George Bush's record has been disastrous. I think, as is now the general wisdom, that he certainly not cared about domestic policy overall. And so to that extent, we've had modest increases in things like funds to fight the drug problem. He has tried to innovate in the area of education, by his Education 2000 program. I think that the general approach to urban problems has been the same as his education concept, and that is a question of competition will solve everything. The market factor, even with respect to social policy, will be effective. I think I see that also in his approach to welfare reform. I don't believe there's one scintilla of evidence that the market approach to all of these social problems will be effective for most of the people who are affected by disadvantage. And yet I think somehow we accept the notion that enterprise zones are going to be a savior, that somehow choice schools will be a savior. And most of these competitive type approaches to solving these very vexing problems where people wouldn't really be in the situation they're in if they could compete, whether or not that's going to be effective. So George Bush has not really had a program dealing with the inner city areas, and I think that that's one of the reasons why he is especially vulnerable at this time.
So just to summarize the picture you've painted, you say that President Bush's policies racially have been disastrous, that Governor Clinton isn't doing enough to really address African-American issues, and that you suspect it would be the same way if he got elected. And furthermore, that candidates are almost afraid to court the black vote for fear it might alienate white voters. So where does that leave us in your mind?
Well, I think that leaves us at a very dangerous place. Because I think we have seen the tendency for people in the urban areas, black, white, Hispanic, otherwise, to act out ultimately if their frustration level grows to an unbearable extent. I would hate to think that that's the way intelligent people handle problems in 1992. But it seems as though if this particular constituency is not politically salient, then certainly public policy is not going to flow. And that's the message that I think people are getting. And I think that what we have to do, unless there is a movement in another direction, to gird up for a period of rocky social relationships in this country for some time to come.
Ron Walters is the author of Black Presidential Politics in America. He chairs the Political Science Department at Howard University. This is Fresh Air.